You heard from Dan McLaughlin and the Cardinal skipper, Mike Schilt. Danny Mac with the calls on FS Midwest. 303 in the Fast Lane. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. BT, Ranj, and Randy, three things. Number one, I'm glad the Cardinals got turned down by Toronto when they offered Jack Flaherty for Josh Donaldson the winter before last.
Worked out quite well.
Yeah. Number two, the old adage of pitching, hard up and in, soft low and away, still works.
Yeah.
And number three, Jack Flaherty is a stud. He is on the verge of becoming a number one, number one. There's a difference between a number one and number one, number one. Number one, number one is a number one on any staff in baseball. He's getting very close to that point.
You're confusing me with all these numbers, Randy. I know he's been great, it's though.
Math. How about this? There are ones and one A's. He's a one.
Yeah, okay.
Is that fair?
Yeah. All right. We'll go ace,
he's
too. Let's sprinkle
okay,
ace in.
Fine.
He's
a horse. Just ace.
A horse is good. He's a man, Randy. He's got arms. But, no, you know what? I, like everyone else, who doesn't love seeing what they're seeing out of Jack Flaherty right now? His last three starts have been unreal. He's last three, all right, against the Cubs, Dodgers, and obviously the Royals last night. Seven innings, one hit. Seven innings, four hits. Seven innings, three hits, no runs in any of them. Limiting the walks, striking out the world. Like, everything about it has been great. But you know what I love about this year for Jack Flaherty? While it would be great to say, oh man, wire to wire, he's been on fire. In June, he was bad. He had an ERA over 7. He was laboring. He was looking for it. He was just, you could tell pitch to pitch, he didn't know where the ball was going and didn't believe that he was going to be able to execute. And he got over that hump. To me, that learning at this level is incredibly hard. But it's also incredibly rewarding when you're able to do that, when you're able to get through those struggles and get back to dominance. And we're seeing a run now of like 8 starts in a row where he has been awesome.
There is nothing unusual about a rookie pitcher going into his second season and having a little bit of struggle, even if it's for half a season. Sometimes it happens for a full year. And they eventually figure it out. Nothing has changed for me with the way I think about him. I still thought it when he was struggling, but just thought he was kind of in a rough stretch and he will eventually come out of it. But I thought, and we said it last year, and I did not think it was hyperbole to suggest he has actual Cy Young potential. I don't think that's us just, you know, trying to pump up a guy who's on the home team and being hopeful about it. I think he can do it. I mean, this is, if there's anybody on the team aside from Carlos Martinez when he was truly in his prime, and I guess he should technically be in his prime years, mm-hmm. but he's not right now in his prime because he's not pitching in the rotation. Jack Flaherty has that potential, and I don't think there's any question about that. And what we've seen from him lately is evidence of it. Now, can he do this for a full season starting in 2020? Hopefully. I think he can. But if there's anybody on the team that I feel the most confident in getting to that level, it is most definitely him.
Now, early in the season, a lot of the talk with Flaherty revolved around his fastball velocity. But the skipper likes what he's seeing now.
I think we've addressed it over the last 7 starts. It's just that conviction with his fastball, the command of his fastball. Jack and most pitchers, but Jack in particular, just in control of everything he's doing. You know, he's just got great tempo. He's just in control of his body language. He's going at guys. He's working ahead in counts. He's getting control in counts, like I say. And then he's hitting with the slider. He's been on the plate, under. Just got a good plan. He's executing his plan. And like I said, he's got some secondary pitches after his slider that have been pretty good, a changeup and a curveball as well. So, you know, he's a tough look.
And the big thing there, the operative words that he used, are getting ahead in counts and controlling counts.
Oh, I wasn't even listening. I was singing Don't Stop Till You Get Enough.
Great song.
In the back.
Great song.
Michael Jackson.
Actually,
doing
the
his thing.
Entire CD was great.
Off the Wall is awesome.
Yeah, it is.
All good
it
stuff.
Really is.
Here we go. Turn that up.
It's a great way to talk about the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Now we can get into it. The fastball command for Jack Flaherty.
By the way.
What?
Michael Jackson, on the cover of this album, had a different nose than on the cover of later albums.
Yeah. And this one looks pretty real on the cover of this album. The other one, you know, look, everybody goes through changes, Randy. That wasn't the soul change.
Yeah, that
wasn't
the worst
Jackson.
Change he went through either.
Well, maybe. Who knows?
I kind of wish he would have stopped after this album, in hindsight.
Mm-hmm. With the changes or with music?
With just
because music
being
was,
himself.
Musically, he was great.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the other stuff, you know?
Allegedly the other stuff.
Yeah.
If you don't watch
That's
Finding
true.
Neverland or whatever it is.
Don't.
Don't watch
Actually,
it.
Actually, yeah, I don't know, kind of. If you
should
want your,
probably
look,
watch it.
if you're about our age and you want your childhood ruined, yes, go watch Finding Neverland.
Yeah, you'll love it. Anyways, back to Jack Flaherty and that incredible song right there. That was the background of that entire Mike Schilt cut. His fastball command was as good as we've seen it. And that's what makes your secondary stuff good, is proving that you can dot your fastball anywhere you want. And he was abusing hitters on the inside part of the plate, Randy, to your earlier point of hard in, soft away. It's pitching 101. But it only works if you can execute it. If you're leaving your fastball middle, that thing is in the gap before you get a chance to get to your nasty slider. So the fastball command for Jack Flaherty has been so good here recently. It just comes out of his hand. It looks like it just jumps on the hitters. He's on top of his game.
And part of the evidence is seeing that not a whole lot of guys are getting hard contact on him. Gordon got him a couple of times. Merrifield did. But if you go back and look at the StatCast numbers from last night's game, there just wasn't a whole lot of solid contact that happened. There was the double by Dozier later in the game. Actually, that was in the, you know, that was in the first inning. But a lot of times it's very difficult for some starters to, you know, be in the first and have your stuff settled. And by the time you get to the second or third, you're grooving. And that's pretty much what happened to him. They just did not attack him because they weren't able to.
I thought one of the interesting things, I actually thought that Flaherty might be trying to make a point in the first three innings when he didn't strike anybody out. And after the game, Schilt was asked about that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one thing about it, I mean, Jack, and the thing that's been able to allow him to go deep in games is he didn't need the strikeout. Was there when he needs it. And I think that's been that next step for Jack is knowing when he can get his contact, where he can get it early in counts with quality pitch, and then certain situations, knowing he can, you know, get his punch out as well. So Jack continues to take those next steps. Proud of him. He's in control the whole way.
He was.
Yeah, he was. Strikeouts are a product of a great approach. Strikeouts are a product of getting ahead and getting to the point where you can bury somebody. But a strikeout's not worth getting somebody out on seven pitches when you could have got him out on three. You know,
yeah.
And that's what Jack has, his stuff. That was when in June when he was going through the big struggles. Wasn't that our main beef in watching him? Is he's nibbling too much? Mm-hmm. Like, well, what are we doing here? Your stuff is way too good. It can play within the strike zone. And with two strikes, you don't have to try to bury three sliders in the dirt. Throw one for a strike, get some weak contact, and get on to the next one. He's doing that.
And he really didn't get into much trouble yesterday at all. And when he did, he got double play balls. So you're looking at somebody who is certainly at the top of his game. And this Cardinals team that has playoff hopes, he's got to keep doing this. This is what he's got to be now for the rest of the year.
Yeah. With respects and an homage to Daniel Tosh, calling him the number one, is not the epitome of hyperbole.
This is lost on me.
Yeah, me too. I've seen Daniel Tosh.
Uh-huh. The epitome of hyperbole?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. That's,
I appreciate that.
I do.
Okay.
Putting the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllables. I know that. Definitely.
Is that a Daniel Tosh bit?
Don't think so.
Don't
Not
either.
My part. His probably is, huh. Since he credited the work. I forget what mine's from.
I don't either.
Friends or something.
I don't either. Hey, by the way, how about Yadi framing a pitch that bounced? That was awesome.
That was great.
My man's got some skills.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love
a Z.
When that happens.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
It's the old A.J. Pierzynski.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Hey, things are quickly changing in Major League Baseball. Should penalizing teams for tanking be another change to consider for the future? That's next on 101 ESPN. That's our friend, the Hall of Famer Tony La Russa, yesterday here in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. By the way, we did get a text, and I got to confess, all those comedians look the same to me. So,
What?
I mean, they're all very different, but okay.
What did the texter say?
So it was Brian Regan, not Daniel Tosh, you dorks.
Yeah, okay.
Is what it said. And that's, by the way, we will respond to anything that has you dorks or you
yes,
ass.
Yes, that's what I was wondering. Yeah. Is that better than
so,
you ass?
That's the same.
Give credit where credit is due. It was Brian Regan that said the epitome of hyperbole.
And Brian Regan doesn't really work blue, so that seems more like a joke.
Epitome of
his.
Hyperbole, yes.
Yeah, I would agree.
I agree with Tony La Russa about his vision of baseball, but I also don't think that you can put the toothpaste back in the tube. And I know that he's hoping that we have a correction and go back to where we were, but I'm also realistic enough to realize that it's going to be very difficult to change what baseball is right now.
So, and I absolutely 100% agree with that as well. So if you're Major League Baseball, though, if you are watching this, if you're Rob Manfred and you're seeing all these same things, and you're seeing strikeouts, home runs, balls not in play, long games, you're seeing all these things that maybe to Tony La Russa, and I'll take his word when it comes to entertaining baseball, guys seen a lot of it. If you've got Hall of Famers saying that the game is not exciting and the game's not what maybe it could be, then I at least have to change things that I have the ability to change. And one of those things for me, you know what's not fun? While it's okay every once in a while because they have a position player out there that throws like 70 and he gets some guys out, the Orioles aren't fun to watch play. The Orioles are a bad baseball team. The Marlins are a bad team. The Tigers are a bad team. The Royals, I hope they continue to be a bad team tonight at the very least. That's not fun to watch, okay? So you go from having nothing in play and lots of strikeouts and home runs, and then you have bad teams to boot. Major League Baseball has to fix the bad teams. So that goes to punishing teams that are doing horribly. Back to the idea of the inverse draft.
I love that.
Draft,
this
right?
is it.
So
yep.
If you are the team that ends up right on the outside looking in, you just miss out on the second wild card spot, guess what? You got the first pick. I mean, that's where you're at. And obviously, each division, you'll end up, it'll be records. You know, the records that is the best one right on the outside looking in.
Right.
I think that solves a lot of problems. That has a lot of teams out there winning. And by the way, in the process of doing this, I believe a salary floor would help out quite a bit to make sure you're winning.
A salary floor, or at least increase the minimum salary for players on the roster. So you're going from like $500,000. I don't know how much you could raise it or should, but you get closer to $1 million. That would make a big difference, I think, because you can't ever really tell teams not to shed salary. How do you regulate something like that unless you have a minimum requirement of how much each guy gets paid? And if that minimum is fairly high, then they have to maintain some kind of something on the roster. You can't just let everybody go. But I don't feel like overall this is something that you're going to change dramatically. There are teams in all sports that are atrocious every year. There's a really bad football team. Look at the Cleveland Browns for a really long time. They were always lousy for a really long time. I don't think you're ever going to truly get away from truly bad teams.
But at least in the NFL, there's a premium placed on intelligence. And the reason the Browns were bad is because they were idiots. And the Rams, when they were here, they disassembled their franchise so that they could alienate the fan base, and there was a method to their madness. But in the NFL, there's a premium put on intelligence, and in baseball, there isn't. And that, if you have a salary floor and you have at least a compression so that teams do have to spend money, then there is a premium put on intelligence to get the best players.
See, I don't know if there's not a premium on intelligence, because some of these teams that do really, really well, and I understand in many cases they have a higher payroll like the Dodgers, but they've also got a pretty brilliant guy working their front office. Same thing goes for the Houston Astros. They've got some smart people who work there. So I don't think that it's exclusively a situation where dumb teams are the bad teams at all costs. I don't really think that's what's happening.
I think the dumb teams generally are.
Well, I'm saying...
I mean, Peter Angelos, look at the Orioles.
I believe that he kind of knows what he's doing because he's still making money.
Yeah, but everybody's making
money. He's not
concerned.
Though. Right.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing. And to the the differences between the NFL and Major League Baseball, while the NFL might have hit the peak that it's at, it's still wildly popular.
Right.
And I understand that it's basically, I mean, I know it's 3 days a week, but it's one day. I mean, it's Sundays that people are tuning in and watching. But the overall thought with the NFL is it doesn't have a problem. Major League Baseball, yeah. The overall look is it has a problem. So what are you going to do to fix it? Are you going to keep doing the same old thing? Because I agree. Like, I understand the numbers, and I understand that there is a premium for hitting home runs and doubles and slugging, and I get all of that stuff. While I don't love the product as much as Tony was saying, I like seeing the ball put in play. I like seeing fielders do things like that. You're probably not going to change that stuff overnight. The other stuff you can. Yeah.
Should note, breaking news, Jake Arrieta apparently out for the season with an elbow injury for the Phillies. That's bad news for them. I do think the worst thing about baseball is that guys go to the plate trying to walk. and there is no way that you can make a walk exciting.
The only time that a walk can be exciting is if it's the tying run or game-winning run with the bases loaded in the ninth.
Only way.
Or it's Billy Hamilton that walks. It's like, oh, here we go. It's the show, baby.
Yeah. Now, I'm with you, but I'm not sure that you can totally fix this, that you have the best of everything, because I do believe the power. Home runs are exciting, and that's a good addition to the game. If we could have a perfect game, you're getting a ton of that, a ton of doubles, ton of extra base hits, and also not very many walks. I don't know if there's a way to make all of those things happen at once, because when the strike zone, and I agreed with what you said about this, Randy, and I believe Tony sort of disagreed with you on this, and I think that it would make a difference if you called the strike zone a little bit bigger, because you would basically force hitters to make some contact because they can't keyhole and just wait for this really small area that the ball has to come through, or they're not going to offer at it. That is not a very exciting part of the game. I totally agree with that. And I think if you expanded the strike zone, you might bring down some of that stuff.
Yeah, and I don't think Tony totally squashed it. He just said it's not as simple as that.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of variables that go into it. And I understand, like, wholesale changes as far as rules. The thing to remember, too, always thinking from, like, a business side, if you change a rule like the strike zone, it's not really changing a rule since it's already there, but you just don't call it that way. But I wonder, like, what has to change as far as compensation of players? Like, who's going to dig into numbers and be like, all right, well, you're calling this strike zone now? Well, your 270 hitter that was a guy that had whatever OPS, well, that guy is now a 240 hitter, and that better show in reflection to a contract. I feel like that there's a lot that goes into every rule that changes from changing the game on the field.
I agree with that, but I think what will happen is it's the sort of thing that works itself out over time.
Yeah. So do you think that we'll ever see this, what we're talking about as far as changing the draft process or having a salary floor? And oftentimes you're not going to see a floor unless you see a ceiling.
Right.
I don't see us seeing a ceiling. I don't feel like that's going to happen with Major League Baseball, is having a quote-unquote cap, even though you have a soft cap currently with the luxury
tax. I don't think owners want to do that at this stage. They don't care about the cap as long as there's no floor, because they've already capped themselves with the luxury tax. So I don't think they're concerned about that. I could see some changes in the next CBA that would make it more equitable for the teams that are in that middle class. Kind of like the Cardinals, actually. The Cardinals are a team that would benefit greatly from a rule like that.
Just barely outside looking in the last couple of years.
The worst thing that you can be is mediocre.
Correct.
Because that just begets more mediocrity.
So think about this at the end of the year, in September, where you have a lot of teams have their call-ups and they're looking towards the future a little bit. Those guys still have something legitimate as a team to play for, not just as an individual. Because the last thing you want to do is finish in last place. You do that, you're getting a horrible draft pick as a team. And this is I'm thinking about this. The players don't worry about the draft, right? The players aren't excited about the next first round pick that's coming to take their job. But your manager is, your front office is, your owner is. So he's going to give you the best pieces that you could possibly get to succeed at that time. How often do we watch games in September where you look at the team? The players are trying, okay? Those guys are trying, but they're not good enough. They're not even close to good enough. And there are prospects down in the minor leagues that would make you a lot better. There are free agents that you could have signed that would have made your team better. While not a playoff team, a team that can contend, well, all of a sudden that team that can contend could get the next Bryce Harper or get the next whoever. Name your first overall draft pick. To me, that's a lot of incentive in the game.
Well, I think another thing that would have to happen, which I don't, this is going to go back to whether or not owners will agree to it, and I know they're not going to want to, so I don't know how you force it to happen, but being able to manipulate service time, I think, is a fairly big issue in the game. Because of the sort of thing BT's talking about, you've got some guys who are in the minor leagues who absolutely belong here, and they should be playing in front of maybe somebody else. And it's the only sport that does that. How many sports can you think of where a guy is ready to be in the big leagues but isn't allowed to because a team can wait a little bit longer, and that means they get an extra year of control down the road? I think that's a bad part of the game. That if you're, because at least in September, you could have some of those guys playing here and give reasons for people to come out to the ballpark, even if the team's not very good. You can see some of the future stars.
Yeah, there are changes that need to be made. By the way, BT, looking at your idea for the draft, if that would have been in place for the last 4 years, the Cardinals would have had a top four pick in the draft at the very worst in each of the last three drafts.
All of a sudden, and then you're making the push quicker. And then there's a lot of churn when it comes to who's getting these picks, because then that team's a playoff team, and you kind of get them off the books. You don't have the Marlins for 5 years in a row, God forbid, if in fact they actually can draft okay. You don't have the same stuff over and over again. I don't know. It seems too simple to work.
Right. And don't ever feel like teams are poor, because if this was a losing venture, there's no way these people would own these clubs. They are still making good money. So even when Baltimore or the Marlins or any other team that tries to let you know, or the Cleveland Indians, who are going to let Francisco Lindor walk because they don't have money, they're all making money. It's absurd, because if they weren't making money, they would get out of the business.
These guys aren't about making money. These guys are about being billionaires.
Yes.
And you don't become a billionaire by giving away $130, $140, $150 million to multiple people. That's the reality, the unfortunate reality of the situation. It's more about being a billionaire and being up on that Forbes 400 list for a lot of these guys than it is about winning baseball games or winning World Series.
Yeah, which is a shame, too, because I believe, and I've said this before, sports should be treated like a public trust, because people are investing their time, money, attention, everything into it. Every single year, you're asking them to do it, and they do it, and you don't always reward them.
Ron, you don't get into that business to win trophies.
Oh, I know that. And that's,
you can have both. It,
but I do think you could have
you
both.
Can have
that's the
both.
Thing. Is that I do believe that kind of plays into one of the reasons baseball can find itself in trouble here very soon.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. The Cardinals looking for the sweep in Kansas City tonight. And one of the NFL's best quarterbacks is sidelined again. That's next on 101 ESPN. You know what the Cardinal fans will be chanting tonight in Kansas City?
No. What, Randy?
Randy, Randy, Randy. A Rosarena, who's going to make his major league debut tonight for the Cardinals. It'll be Dakota Hudson, Dak, against the Royals opening day starter, Brad Keller. The Cardinal lineup has Fowler in right, Edmund at third, Goldschmidt at first, Ozuna, DeYoung, Marp is the DH, Yachty, Colton Wong, and Randy, a Rosarena. Sorry about it, Lane Thomas.
It happens, man.
There's just too much talent on this team.
Why are you being snarky? They've won four in a row. Why are you going to be all snarky about it? Either way, even if it's at the expense of Lane Thomas, I'm excited. I'm excited to watch Randy Rosarena go out there, get his major league debut, and hopefully continue what he was able to do at the minor league level. He was tearing up AAA. He was getting on base like crazy. He was doing everything that you could ask him to do, and he's going to get a shot to do so tonight against the Royals, and hopefully he's able to spark something.
Maybe he'll stick, too. You don't know yet. We're going to have to find out.
Maybe it'll be Vince Coleman.
Man, you never know.
Has he told Schilt that he's not going back down yet? Because that was Vince. He's going to be here for a couple of days.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm going to stay.
Yeah, I'll be here.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey, we need help for our 4:15 segment from you. What things do the Cardinals need that make no sense to you? What things do the Cardinals do that make no sense to you?
Oh.
What things do they do that make no sense to you? Leave a mic drop at the 101 ESPN app. Like bringing up Randy Arozarena yesterday, or for some people it was bringing up Lane Thomas on the 30th of July and not giving him a start until Sunday. Those sorts of things. What do they do that bothers you that just doesn't make sense to me? We want to hear from you with the mic drop feature on the 101 ESPN app.
Is this team not a game out of first place and won four in a row? Why are we pissed off about things?
Because we're sports talk radio, damn it.
All right. We pick inopportune times to be pissed off. We should be happy.
Yeah. Hey, a lot of day baseball in the major leagues today, and we'll bring you up to date on all of that. The White Sox lead the Astros 8-6 as they play in the top of the seventh at the Cell. Can I call it the Cell, Ronge?
Well, it's not the Cell anymore.
So I can't call it
the Cell. I think you can call it the G-rate or the rate.
Or great? Great?
Some people call it the G-spot.
Whatever
you
want to
call it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That is
awesome.
I
don't believe it's endorsed by the team.
I've heard it's hard to find.
I've still never seen it.
Yeah.
I don't think it exists. It is there.
No, I've been there before.
Have you?
I just don't remember how to get there.
Just
it's a nice ballpark, though.
You just have to feel your way around.
Overall.
So the White Sox lead Houston 8-6 as they play in the seventh inning. The current White Sox pitcher, and this might lead to a bad result, is Bummer.
Oh, that can't be good.
No, not when you're ahead 8-6 in the seventh.
Oh,
also,
no.
The Twins lead the Brewers 5-3. Go Minnesota, eh? Another comeback win. Josh Hader allowed another home run last night. They got problems in Milwaukee, don't they?
They do. They are currently behind the Cardinals by a game and a half.
Yeah. The Diamondbacks and Rockies are tied 2-2 in the fourth inning. Rays and Padres 2-2 in the third. The A's all over the Giants early 4-0 as they play in the third inning. Second inning in D.C., the Nationals and Reds are scoreless. And earlier today, the Rangers toppled the Blue Jays 7-3. The Yankees edged the Orioles 6-5. And the Red Sox were 5-1 winners over the Indians. Let's see if the Yankees hit any more home runs. I think this was their last game of the season against the Orioles. And Sanchez hit number 26 on the season. So I believe they finished with 61 against the Orioles this year.
Well,
pretty cool.
Well, I mean, if you're the Yankees, that's not fun if you're Baltimore.
Nah,
Baltimore,
or if you're a Baltimore fan.
They are a freaking mess. And we were talking a little bit off the air about what the Phillies are dealing with right now. Jake Arrieta, who's going to be done for the rest of the season. They're two games behind where the Cardinals are. And the Mets are not going to have McNeil, they say, for 10 days with a hamstring issue. But, you know, you can say 10 days and he'll be fine.
We've heard that before.
And then it turns into a month.
Is it wrong to, because you guys know where my allegiance lies when it comes to baseball. It's the Cardinals, for sure. But is it wrong to, from afar, hope that the Mets just keep going on a run? Because they were they were a team that did something that nobody thought that they would do. They acquired talent as opposed to getting rid of it, and they've gotten better. And they've been winning ball games. I think that is a nice model for Major League Baseball and for teams. When you think you're sitting there, a team that was on the outside, by the way, not a team that was in first place or second place, but a team that was way out, say, you know what, we're going to buy and see what happens.
I
like that.
With you on this, because I like the idea, though I don't know you're going to have a whole lot of ownership groups that see it the same way. But I like the idea of other teams looking at that and going, well, maybe we can do the same thing next year. Maybe we can add, we're just on the outside, and actually improve. I love the idea of all teams trying to get better.
Yeah, me too. The Baltimore Colts, the Indianapolis Colts have an interesting situation. Throughout training camp, they have held out Andrew Luck because of a calf injury. On Monday, the owner of the club, Jimmy Ursay, went on Sirius XM and said, no, it's not a calf injury. It's a bone injury in the ankle, and we feel like we've got it under control. Yesterday, the general manager, Chris Ballard, had a conference call with reporters and said, well, no, it's not really a bone injury. It's more of a high ankle sprain.
What do we have?
So it's gone from a calf injury to a bone injury to a high ankle sprain. I'm sure it'll be plantar fasciitis by the end of today.
He's going to have one leg soon. Like, that's where he's going to be at. Out of those three, and I'm no doctor here, high ankle sprains take forever, don't they?
Yeah.
Like, that's an issue. Now, anything involving the bone in general could be a problem. Either way, the Colts go from, because they've shored up a lot of things when it comes to their team. Like, the O-line is better. Defense is better. They've got a couple of offensive weapons. If you don't have Andrew Luck, and this, with all due respect to Jacoby Brissett, you aren't winning.
You're kind of screwed.
Yeah, I mean, Brissett is fine as a placeholder, but if this ends up being a thing that lingers on, and he's your guy that you got to go to war with, your expectations, they totally change.
100%. If there's this much confusion going on about what the injury is, there's either A, some incompetence that's happening, or B, somebody or multiple people are not being entirely upfront about what's going on, and that could include him. Himself, maybe Andrew Luck hasn't been entirely upfront about whatever's happening with him. At any rate, the bottom line is, if he does not play, they are in trouble.
And finally, last Thursday, Ohio State University, the Ohio State University, is seeking to trademark the word "the" for use on clothing and hats. They want to trademark the word "the."
I'm so glad you brought this up, because that's exactly what I was going to bring up, is this right here. Have you guys ever, like, trademarked anything? Have you ever gone through this process?
I have not.
I haven't either. Like, I've thought about it with different things in the past, but I've never gone through it. You know why? Because it seemed like a real pain in the ass. Like, even if you have a very good idea, and one that is kind of, like, off the wall, where you know that nobody else is going to have it, it seems like there are a lot of hoops to jump through. I can't imagine the hoops that you have to jump through to get the word "the."
Yeah. Now, Jax did it with Play Gloria. Jax in Philadelphia did it with Play Gloria. Pat Riley did it with the word "three-peat" because he used it when the Lakers were trying to three-peat. The?
It's the most used word in the English language. I used it twice
just said,
there.
Yeah, now you're in trouble.
Two times there. I don't know. First of all, we all know that everybody does this anyhow with the Ohio State. And I can't wait until we get James Laurinaitis on again to talk some football and see how he feels about this trademark, because he loves him some Ohio State, hates him everything Michigan. I'm sure he's fully behind this. But I don't see how you do this, how you get this.
I think that they'll have something to say about this at the Lindenwood University.
Uh-oh. Randy, don't.
I'm just saying.
See, now you're going to be in trouble.
No, nothing's been trademarked, and I was saying the Lindenwood University well before anybody was saying the Ohio State University.
Well, I think you need to be very careful, not get us in legal trouble here.
In trademarking the here, and certainly it's pertaining to anything in front of Ohio State, does it also give them the power to, so you couldn't say the Lindenwood or the, like, is it in front of any college is how that works?
The way it reads in the story is that they seek the trademark to be able to use it on clothing.
Right.
Seeking a trademark for use on clothing and hats, according to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
So no other school could do that.
Right.
Right. So what they've done is, if you've seen, or if you have not seen any of the shirts they're selling, it's just like a red shirt with the big word "the" on it. And then there's a little Ohio State logo below it. So that's what I believe they're trying to get away with.
You guys, the or the?
For
it
that,
depends.
It's the.
It's the Ohio State.
But if
you
I'm talking
say
about a statement, if we're talking about the Blues, then it's the. But for the Ohio State University, that's what they want.
I think you just know what sounds right in the moment.
Just seems weird that you can interchange it like that. You know?
I know.
Those are your hot topics of the day on 101 ESPN.
Like data and data?
Yeah.
It's very similar.
Just like that. I
potato,
mix and
potato?
Match, too.
Nobody says patata.
Tomato, tomato.
Nope. Nobody,
nobody says that either.
You say tomato.
Except in that song.
I say tomato.
You say potato.
Like
I say
40 and farty? Like that?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that's just a weird accent.
Now, that's something that St. Louisans have to trademark is farty.
Is it spelled as exactly as it sounds?
No,
F-A-R-T-Y?
It's spelled F-O-R-T-Y.
No. No.
Farty.
No.
Yep. Hey, if you want to get to the playoffs, talented superstars are the best way to do it, right? One team is proving that concept wrong. That's next on 101 ESPN. The Yankees have a payroll of better than $200 million, but according to Wallace Matthews of Yahoo, last night against Baltimore, the Yankees fielded a starting lineup that cost a total of $30 million. They picked up their 16th win in 18 games, and most of the damage was done by Gio Urshela, who's making $555,000, Mike Tauchman, who's making $557,000, backup catcher Austin Romine, spare outfielder Cameron Maben, who's making the minimum, and minimum wage starter Domingo Germán, who became the MLB's first 16-game winner. Gentlemen, we talked earlier about being smart, and one of our complaints about the Cardinals with the payroll is not spending smart. What the Yankees have done, kind of like the Dodgers, is build a roster of 35 major league players that can fill in and do good work for you. And when they lost their third baseman earlier in the year, they were able to bring in a guy like Urshela, and he's been great. They've lost Stanton, and Tauchman comes in, and he's got 16 home runs. Cameron Maben fills in wonderfully with the loss of injured players. It really is amazing what the Yankees have been able to do, and they've done it pretty much without great starting pitching, too.
The starting pitching has been bad for the Yankees overall. You're right. And they have plenty of depth. I do think it's a lot easier to go out and to be able to give the young guys an opportunity to go out and play when you have a sizable lead one. And when you have the talent that they do have, so this isn't a, you know, a $70 million payroll team, even though they rolled out a $30 million starting lineup, you know reinforcements are coming. So it's a lot easier to not shell off these prospects and go make a trade because you feel like you have to. But they have been smart. They've done a great job for all of the evil empire that the Yankees, whether they stand for or you believe they stand for, of being able to purchase everything and anything. Yeah, they could still do that. But they also draft well.
Yeah.
And they develop their players.
And we've talked a lot about the Dodgers' ability to scout professionally and picking up people like Justin Turner and Chris Taylor and Max Muncy. The Yankees go out at the end of spring training, March 23rd, and they get Mike Tauchman from Colorado for Philip Deal. Tauchman this year hitting .299 with a .955 OPS, slugging .574, 12 homers, 42 RBIs in 67 games. Those are the sorts of deals that turn you into a championship club with the inevitability that even if you have the $200 million payroll, you're going to have injuries.
So it's absolutely about the scouting outside of it, the amateur scouting and also the professional scouting too, because you've got when you're going to have to fill holes throughout the season. You know your team's not going to be healthy all year long. There is no team that ever goes through an entire year, 1 through 25, with the same 25. There are always ups and downs. You always have to rely on somebody else. So your scouting has to be good. You have to know what you're getting, and you also have to get quite a bit of luck, I think. Mm-hmm. It's not all luck, and so I don't want to put it that way. But there is good fortune that comes along with DJ LeMahieu playing as well as he does. He's playing over, I think, what almost anybody expected. I never would have put him in the conversation for MVP 2 years ago. Never would have thought that was going to be a possibility for him.
2 years ago, he did win
a
batting title, though.
But as far as being an actual most valuable player, never would have thought he'd be in that conversation for real.
I did like them, though, rolling the dice on him, roll the dice on Tulowitzki. That one didn't work out for them. But they knew they were going to have not have D.D. Gregorius for a time. So they went out, and they got a few major league capable guys, and it's worked out for them to this point. And heck, they've been able to move Torres over to second. And that's the big thing that they did was they got a desperate Cubs team to trade Gleyber Torres to them. And they've got another MVP candidate there.
Well, and by the way, that's a trade that the Cubs make 1,000 times.
Out of 1,000.
Yep. Yeah, they won a World Series because of that and got Aroldis Chapman. And sometimes those things hurt. It's a genius move for them because it worked out.
See, the only thing about that is I think they may still win the World Series even without making that deal. But you can't argue that it worked. The fact that it did work and they went out and they overextended themselves to make it happen, nothing matters afterwards, but they probably still could have won and kept Torres too, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, and the big thing is probably, right? You never know when it comes down to it. Now, for all the talent that the Yankees have right now and all of these young players and the bargain bins, the draft picks, the guys not making tons of money, everybody not named Stanton that's out there, when it comes down to postseason time, when it comes down to the playoffs, your boys better be there. The horses better be in the barn, because if they're not, then you're going to be sitting there watching. The group that you just saw beat up on the Orioles, that team can't beat the Astros. The Astros have as many superstars as you do. There's another story about the Astros. I forget where I was reading it at. It could have been at USA Today or somewhere. But basically, they got too much talent. They have like a logjam of players sitting at AAA that should be big leaguers that just can't crack the lineup over there. So you better have your guys ready. But it is really important, back to Randy's original point, of having a 40-man roster that is not full of place fillers for a guy. It's like, I guess we kind of need to protect this guy because maybe we could use him down the road and he might turn into something. No, you need guys that you can go to. You need to be able to pick up the phone and say, hey, give me so-and-so. I know that so-and-so has got at least a legitimate chance to play in the big leagues for you and help out.
I do love the idea the Astros are as good as they are, as deep as they are. And then they have somebody like Alvarez just come up and do what he's doing, and they didn't even really need that to happen. So it's like you have such an embarrassment of riches, and whoever you go to comes up and contributes way more than you even expected. I can't imagine anything could go better for a team than things are going for the Astros right now.
No, and here's just an example of the difference between the Yankees and the Cardinals, for example. Last August, the Yankees purchased Gio Urshela from the Blue Jays, probably for $1. And during the offseason, The Cardinals got, is it Drew Robinson from Texas?
Yep.
In exchange for Patrick Wisdom. The Yankees wind up with Gio Urshela, and the Cardinals wind up with Drew Robinson. And I'm sure that they expected Urshela to be a minor league guy and maybe a utility guy like the Cardinals hoped that Drew Robinson would be. But that's the difference, is that they've scouted exceptionally well at the pro level.
So they're scouting, and I think there's some good fortune involved there, too, because I don't even think they thought he was going to be what he is.
Well, and they didn't think Andujar would wind up being their third baseman either. They were hoping that they would be able to work things out because he's bad defensively.
So it happens.
Yeah, it does. So that they would have somebody else at third, maybe Torres or maybe LeMahieu, with ultimately Andujar moving to first.
But really,
they didn't expect Luke Voit to be Luke Voit either.
Exactly. And the thing is, you acquire as much of that as you possibly can, because some of it is going to hit. And I think that's the thing. It's about collecting as much talent as you could possibly get, knowing that maybe four or five of those, if you acquire 25 to 30 players who have some real promise, maybe four or five of those will hit, right? But if you only get like three or four of those dudes, then there's a very good chance none of them do.
And I also think that there is such a thing, while there's plenty that goes into it, a lot of scouting and a lot of numbers, sometimes you just get lucky too. And sometimes you get screwed. And, it happens.
It's Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, we've got a new fighter in the 4 o'clock fight here on 101 ESPN.